Another budget work session, and today we're starting off with, do we need to do the roll or anything like that? No. Okay. Today we're going to start off with the Portland Housing Bureau's requested budget. Then we will do the Bureau of Development Services, and then we will do the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and the Human Relations Commission budget. Okay. We'll just be doing the Office of Neighborhood Involvement budget. So we're going to start with the Portland Housing Bureau budget, and I'll turn it over to Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mr. President, colleagues, auditor, staff, and members of the Budget Committee. My name is Nick Fish, and I have the great honor of serving as the commissioner in charge of the new Portland Housing Bureau. And today I'm proud to submit to you PHB's budget requests, our second presentation since the creation of the new bureau last year. I want to begin by thanking Director Margaret Van Vliet, to my right, and her team for their terrific work in putting this budget together. I also want to thank my colleagues, each of you, for your continued support as we continue, too many continues there, to weather this historic economic storm. One of the lessons of this recession is that we have very little control over the feeders that contribute to homelessness and economic insecurity. The collapse of the housing market, the broken mental health care system, the subprime mortgage scandal, and cuts at the state and federal level that fund critical services did not originate in Portland and, frankly, won't be solved in Portland. But we can continue to invest in long-term, cost-effective programs that help our people through this storm. I'm grateful that we live in a community that values and supports the work of this bureau, and that I serve on a council that has made significant investments in safety net programs during this recession. Today, we're continuing to build upon our past successes while confronting new challenges. Director Margaret Van Vliet and her team are building a strong bureau, and together with our community partners, we are making solid progress to achieving our long-term goals. At the same time, our challenges are only getting bigger. We face a rising tide of need at a time of declining resources. And the biggest threat on the horizon is the so-called TIF cliff, the substantial reduction in funds which we project over the next 5 years out of our urban renewal districts, which, combined with projected reductions in state and federal funding, will significantly limit our capacity to respond to this crisis. The budget Margaret will present to you today, Mayor, welcome back. You are missed, but more of that later. The budget Margaret will present to you today reflects these harsh realities and explains how the Portland Housing Bureau plans to meet these challenges. I look forward to our conversation today, and thanks again for your support. Margaret?
Thank you, Commissioner. Mayor Adams and commissioners, I'm very pleased to be here. What I'll share with you today is that the state of the Portland Housing Bureau is very strong and that our progress towards the high-functioning bureau that you all envisioned a couple of years ago continues. What I've done is provided a supplementary information, which you should have in front of you. It looks like this. I won't spend time reading that to you, but I think it does call out some of the most significant pieces of our story that I want to just touch on briefly. So the first thing I wanted to share is that we did embark on a pretty comprehensive and community-based strategic planning process over the last several months. I think we had good engagement, that we staked out our place in the market. We have prioritized our work, and we established some goals. And those are articulated for you there, and I'd be happy to go through those, if not today, then another day or independently with your offices. The other thing I want to call out is that arising out of that strategic planning process is that we did establish social equity as really one of the foundational aspects of our work. And that we recognize the role that housing stability plays in questions of social equity and access. And so that's really going to define a lot of our work going forward. I also want to call out that we did form a new advisory commission that served as our budget advisory commission. Council officially appointed this group of 12 a few months ago, and they're already adding significant value. Jesse Beeson is the current chair, and you'll hear from him in a couple of minutes. The other thing that is no small accomplishment is that we really kept the trains running. Our work continued with contracts, with administering programs like rent assistance and shelters and safety net programs, repairing homes, building rental housing. Even while we were doing a significant amount of transformational work inside the Bureau, we did keep the trains running. And I think I need to call out the staff of the Portland Housing Bureau. It's been through a lot these last couple of years. They get a lot of credit from me personally, and we certainly couldn't be doing the fine work that we're doing without the dedicated staff that work for the Housing Bureau. So what I want to do is just turn quickly to the challenges, and I think they're highlighted best on the back page of the supplementary materials. It looks like this. Yeah. It shows bar graphs this year and what our forecast is for the next several years, and that's the story of what we're facing. So the front of so do people have that in front of them? So I think what this highlights is the magnitude of the financial challenge that we're facing. It shows the TIF, the sizable drop in TIF, and I think folks know what drives that kind of from a larger perspective. And that's the single biggest challenge that we're facing in terms of our budget. But it's certainly not the only drop that we're anticipating and working towards planning for. We had benefited the last couple of years from some injection of stimulus funds from the federal government for a couple of key programs. Some of the stimulus funds we had used to supplant one-time-only general fund. So we kind of stepped away from one-time-only funds, used stimulus funds. Now those are going back away, so you're going to hear a little bit more about one of our decision packages in that regard. Federal cuts are coming, and we don't know the magnitude of what those might be. In CDBG, which is our biggest program from the federal government, it could be as much as a 40% cut, but we're being advised by our colleagues in other cities to plan for about a 25% cut. Our budget did not anticipate that, the one you have in front of you, so we're doing some more scenario planning and may need to come back to you on that. All of that said, we're certainly appreciative, as Commissioner Fish said, of the support of this council, including the $1 million special appropriation we got to address some of the homelessness in the downtown area last year. I've actually got a midterm report on that. We're going to come back to council and share a little bit more of that with you. I think all of this points to the recognition that I've certainly made that our arrangements here financially are not sustainable. We've been talking in this Bureau about trying to achieve sustainability. We're not there yet. And I think it'll take a few more years, we need to kind of climb out of this recession and before we can really talk in terms of what does a sustainable budget look like for this Bureau in trying to address needs across the community. So I think what would be useful now is if I just quickly highlighted a couple of the decision packages and let you know what's behind those, we can turn to your questions. The decision packages 09 and 10 are about our staffing reductions. When I arrived not quite 2 years ago, the combined two agencies before they were merged had about 75 employees. We'll be down to 57 on July 1st. Some of that's attrition, but we have had to inform several employees that their jobs are going away, and that's, of course, never fun. Decision packages 05 and 06 are where what I referenced a couple of minutes ago, that we had long, for many years relied on kind of serial one-time funds. These are funds that our general fund is primarily directed towards our homeless services, so shelter services, rent assistance, case management within the shelters. Those are the services that are funded in those packages. And the reason that's important is that our other sources of funds, TIF and federal funds, are not well suited to that work sort of on the ground. So general fund affords us some flexibility that we wouldn't otherwise have. Decision package O2 is labeled as prevention and rapid rehousing. That's another place where stimulus funds have gone away. So that's a sizable ask there. Package 07 is related to, it's labeled healthy homes. This is where the piece about the inspection, housing inspection services with BDS come into play. We may want to spend a few minutes on that. We placed this here as a general fund ask. We had paid for these similar services with CDBG in the current fiscal year. For a variety of reasons, administratively, that's problematic. And kind of from a regulatory point of view, it's problematic as well. We can talk about that. I know that's on a couple folks' minds. But let me just quickly touch on these other couple, and then we can move to questions. The decision package 08 is labeled as a citywide housing strategy. This is a strategy we really want to be in a position to take a long-term view of what's happening in the market, what's our place, what's the role of local government in the broader scheme of the market, and what are the broad trends in neighborhood development. We really feel like we need a companion to go with a long-term Portland plan, and so that we're in a better position to anticipate opportunities rather than simply respond to them. And then the final one I would call out is 04, which is around homeownership supports. We don't spend a lot of our budget on homeownership supports, but we think it's really critical to stay with questions of helping people get into first-time homeownership who wouldn't otherwise have the possibility, and then also in this moment in time, of course, homeownership retention, foreclosure prevention, and the like. And then the other thing I would say about that is those are services where we do use CDBG and TIF. So this is just helps us mix and match the right source of funds depending on the geography and the circumstance. So I'm going to stop there. I'm going to make a shout out to our friends at FPD and thank Claudio and Andrew for their tremendous support. It's been fun getting to know you better this year and appreciate your support. And then I want to introduce Jesse Beeson, who is our citizen advisor. And I think he has a couple things to say.
Sure. Welcome, Jesse.
Good afternoon. My name is Jesse Beeson. I'm the executive director of Proud Ground. I'm also the current chair of the Portland Housing Advisory Commission. I'm also a member of the Portland Policy Council with the Oregon Opportunity Network. Since becoming a member of the commission, I've enjoyed the discussion, and I've been just incredibly impressed with the information that the staff have presented about the Bureau. There's a lot of information and a lot of great things happening in the Bureau, and they have been open and transparent in sharing all of that with the commission. I've also greatly appreciated how the Bureau has aligned its strategic plan priorities with its request. And I feel that the requested budget will make a positive impact on Portlanders in need. After many spirited discussions and some tough questions that have been answered by the Bureau, I'm happy to report as a member of the Housing Advisory Commission that we are supportive of PHB's budget and its process. And of course, I'm available to answer any questions as well. Not hard ones, though, just easy ones.
Those we'll submit in writing. Mayor, welcome back from your trip.
Thank you.
And we'll turn it back to the council and the budget committee for questions and comments.
Well, I'd just like to compliment you and the team, Commissioner, for delivering while putting the Bureau together. That was the biggest concern of advocates for safe and affordable housing, and you definitely beat you beat expectations, and I appreciate that. I want to also underscore the need that you put down for decision package 08. I don't know what the Bureau of Development, the Bureau of Financial Planning said about it. What did they say about it? They loved it, apparently.
I think they were pretty consistent in saying, even to those things they thought were meritorious, that there were only so many dollars to go around, and so it was a cautionary note. But
is that the housing strategy one?
Yeah. I believe they saw the strength of the ask. They just were questioning how we fund it. I'm letting you off the hook, Andrew, on this because this is something the mayor feels very strongly about.
You don't have to respond. I think it's important to have there because our efforts to date have been around, and rightfully so, around affordable housing. But as we are learning through the Portland plan, there's also housing type. There's also about types, senior housing that you've talked about in the past. As the numbers show, Portland is going to become significantly younger and older at the same time. So how do we sort of deal with all those things? And I really like the way you both put it in terms of just having the strategic framework to work with the private sector and private investors, even if it's just, you know, shining a light on an opportunity they never had thought of in a place they never necessarily had thought of. I think it is very smart, and I just want to underscore my support for a number of things that you put on the table, but especially sort of having that policy framework.
Thank you, Mayor.
Others?
Yeah.
Going to karaoke for us? Stand up. Come on now.
A little flexibility. So I wanted to pursue the quality rental inspection positions that you're proposing become general fund as opposed to, I guess, community development block grant.
Correct.
Which they were last budget. But
correct.
So why can't they be continued to be funded? They are important positions, as you'll hear in a few minutes. The Bureau of Development Services does not have the general fund ability to carry these important positions for the quality of our rental housing stock, which I think is every bit as part of the spectrum of housing as ownership opportunities. We've got to keep our rental stock safe for the residents that live in them. So
absolutely.
Help me figure out why we can't continue to fund those through CDBG or through Housing Bureau general fund allocation.
So thank you. Let me be clear. We want the inspection services to continue as well, and that the quality of rental housing is very important. So I don't want to at all suggest that we don't find those services important. We are funding them with community development block grant this year. We're running into a variety of problems. So at a basic level, what's happening is you can use these federal funds. I'm gonna reference my notes, if I may. May be used for code enforcement. This is per federal regulations. In deteriorating or deteriorated areas where such enforcement, together with public or private improvements, may be expected to arrest the decline of the area. So I think that in terms of the geography of where the inspections need to happen, that probably fits. It gets dicier when you're asking an inspector to go to an address and say, is this in the right census tract? Is this what zip code is that home in, and is that home buyer, and is the city going to further additional investments to raise the area? We found from a compliance point of view, it's pretty hard to make the case to HUD that in every case, the inspector who went out that day and charged their time to that grant really fit that. So that's why we proposed a switch. We're struggling with that. The other thing I'd share is that
aren't the CDBG eligible neighborhoods a pretty wide swath of East Portland?
I think
Southeast Portland and
I'm not actually sure about that. I don't know if any of my staff wants to elaborate on the geography.
We can come back to you on that, Commissioner Saltzman, but I just want to emphasize we are 100% in support of implementing quality rental housing work group recommendations. Mm-hmm. We, as you know, you and I both made some comments during the Fire Bureau presentation about the desire to have BDS housing and the Fire Bureau coordinate on inspections because each of those bureaus brings something different to the table. That what we're planting in our budget is a color of money question. Not that we are not fully supportive, it's just we're posing a question of how we're going to pay for it. And with CDBG being curtailed, that being our most valuable dollar to meet a whole host of housing challenges, we're putting a marker down that we want the council to know that if we want to fully fund it, we may also need general fund support. Not that we're unwilling to put CDBG dollars behind it, but at some point we're going to have to make some very tough trade-offs, and we want you to know that CDBG is our most valuable and flexible dollar. That's all we're saying. We're not in any way disagreeing with you about the merits. And if there's a way to do it, if there was an imperfect world, a way to do it with CDBG alone, we'd craft the program to do it. But we think to do it the right way, we're probably going to need some general fund support.
But you're not asking for general fund support for it.
We did ask for general fund support.
I'm sorry, you did that as a decision package.
Yes, correct.
Correct.
Correct. Correct. The other thing I would just say is that the Bureau did find itself in a position of having to repay HUD with some CDBG dollars that were not used appropriately in the last few years. So not big dollar amount, but we want to be really mindful of not being very careful about where we use it and how we deploy it and this color of money question. So they really will ask us for repayment if we cross a couple of lines. And so we're cautious in that regard.
What is the result
of the inspections? If you find deficiencies, do you go back to make sure that they've been remedied? Is there a charge for the inspections?
So that question may be better answered by someone from BDS. What I can say is that we do provide some repair funds for individual homeowners and renters in some rental properties. So if we're made aware of it and somebody applies to us for some money, there can be funds available to do repair and so forth. But
if it's private property, if it's not part of the pool that the city controls,
right?
Shouldn't the owner be required to make the
absolutely? And often what we find is that they don't. They might be absent, or they might have other issues. And
can you find them then?
We can find them.
Yeah,
the city can find them, red tag them. But there was a report done by the Quality Rental Housing Work Group Study Group, which we'll furnish to you, which looked at some of the existing limitations. For example, the Fire Bureau can't go into single-family homes. We cannot get into people's homes. We have jurisdiction over multifamily units. Sometimes when you bring code enforcement actions against an owner, they may or may not comply, and then now there's life, health, safety issues that are percolating. The report that we're working off of that Commissioner Saltzman alluded to actually has a mechanism for funding some of this work by charging a fee to property owners, which in turn would be used to offset some of the costs of inspections, and then we'd be looking for a beefed-up enforcement regime so we could get, you know, the bad actors to clean up their housing. The question, though, is funding the inspectors and having the money to launch the program. That's been the barrier.
Thank you.
Well, if I could just add on that point, the Metro Family Housing Council has agreed to an assessment on themselves, but they want it to be met by, I think, a 50-50 split with the city. So while they've agreed to assess all their rental owners a fee, they want it to be met, and that's we haven't been able to implement that beefed-up inspection program because of our failure to get that matching amount.
It would seem like that should be general fund money because the CBDG money may go away to get that matching offer, which is very generous from the Metro Multifamily right. Realtors. Right. I also think, though, that we do need CBDG money to do inspections. It's not like even what we could fund from the general fund is going to be enough. And in those targeted neighborhoods, recognizing that we do have to be careful to use the federal money as intended, it seems like that is very wise use of those monies, even though they're very flexible. Keeping current rental housing both affordable and livable is probably the least expensive way to provide affordable housing to our citizens. So I'd like us to look at a mixture of funding, and I'm glad to hear the private sector might be in on that too. I'm also interested in the discussion that Office of Management Finance brings up in terms of moving the Bureau to a non-general fund status.
Yes.
I wonder what your opinion is on that.
Well, I'm new to that vernacular, so I think what it means is that we're charged overhead in a different way. And so I think it might be incrementally a bit more in terms of the fees we might pay. Right now we pay through interagency agreements for the city attorney and for other kinds of services.
That's right. I mean, it's a little bit of a technical issue, but it does have a potentially material impact on Housing Bureau. General fund bureaus don't pay overhead for the services because it would just sort of flow back to them, but non-general fund bureaus do. So Housing has a number of interagencies for some of their services. If we move them to overhead model, the total charges through overhead would be higher. The interagencies would go away. It would reduce some of that, but the total charges for overhead would be higher. I think looking, you know, as we've looked at it over the last couple years, I think it's an appropriate change, but it does have an impact, which is why we raised it in the review.
So if you could give me some more explanation about that offline, that would be helpful to me, because it seems like that's a policy decision that you want council to make. And I'd appreciate also the Housing Bureau's advice. And I want to second the mayor's comments regarding congratulations on where the Bureau is at this point. It's very good to read the progress that you've made and the fiscal restraint and looking ahead that you're currently doing to make sure that as time goes by, we are going to be able to continue to provide these services. So my question is about the tax increment financing set aside and the 30%, yes, and what your opinion is on that issue.
The set aside?
Yeah.
So I'll take every dollar of TIF I can get. That's my opinion. That's my view of TIF. The set aside, we are doing a policy review. We're trying to get some of the users of the system together with PDC financial and leadership folks together to take a look. We're in the fifth year, and council asked us to review how it's going. There's some parts of it that are working really well, and then there's other parts of it that were challenged, and we'll probably bring forward some recommendations for a change in policy. I think there is good reason to consider 30% maybe isn't one size fits all. I think there's good reason to consider that in newer districts we might phase it so that we do less up early in the district and more later in the district, so that over time you get to 30%, but that in the earlier years maybe you let more increment accumulate with things that aren't affordable housing and off the tax roll. So I mean, I think there's some tweaks to the system. But overall, we're feeling really good about how we're working with PDC to.
Thank you. And when do you think that study might be done?
When will that study be done? This spring, I believe. We should have a recommendation for council in July of this year.
Commissioner Fritz, if I could also just add one thing, we have two projects coming online, hopefully this year, that are sort of the poster projects for TIF spending. One is, we'll be doing a groundbreaking for Block 49, which is the first affordable housing project in South Waterfront, and that is scheduled for April 26th. And REACH CDC, the nonprofit partner of the city, and the city will be hosting a groundbreaking. And then Bud Clark Commons, which if you've driven by the building recently, is really in the final stages of being ready for opening, is scheduled for a grand opening on June 2nd. And I would extend an invitation to everyone here to attend both, but I hope particularly you can join us the morning of June 2nd. And the other thing is, for Bud Clark Commons, the other thing I just want to say for people that maybe not as familiar with TIF and how it works, we're going to be talking a lot about the TIF cliff. And this chart, which Margaret's team put on the back side of the supplemental that she handed out, is really, I think, graphically the best illustration of the challenge we face. And because of this TIF cliff, which is not an insidious thing, not a nefarious thing, it's a function of districts expiring, money being front-loaded, funds being expended on major projects. I mean, there's a good story here, but the cliff occurs because the resource is drying up. And so, for example, you know, in fiscal year 10-11, we have a budget of $108 million. Of which almost half, or a little over half, is tax increment finance dollars. But look forward through to FY 2015-2016, we're talking about a budget of $43 million. That's a 60-something million dollar drop-off. That's what we mean by TIF cliff. And what we are beginning to do is do some hard thinking about how we replace that resource, because if we do not have the tax increment financing dollars to do capital construction, we're going to have to find some other source so that we don't lose momentum.
And
bit of context to that, one of the reasons that we face the TIF cliff is we are letting tax increment districts, urban renewal districts, expire.
Absolutely. So if I could follow up on that, you know, we're talking about decision packages that total about $7 million. At the same time, we're looking at a cliff of more than $50 million. I'm trying to put those two things in context. To what extent are we looking at sort of slowing the rate of capital construction of new housing versus providing the portfolio of services that the Bureau provides? And how are those two things at risk over the period we're looking at here? And how do we relate that to the decision package that we have in front of us? I'm trying to put it all together.
Well, I'll take a stab at that, and I'm sure Commissioner Fish will have some thoughts as well. There isn't a perfect match between those things. I think to a large degree, the decision packages keep us whole on what you might consider the safety net. And if I think about the long-term view, we could do safety net services all day long. We could keep building shelter beds. We could keep paying caseworkers. We could keep doing short-term rent assistance and interventions for people who are on the edge of poverty. But if we don't also have a strategy to get more units that are affordable, whether through preservation or new construction, then all the safety net in the world isn't going to amount to anything. That the long-term aim is more units that are affordable in the rental stock, that are quality and affordable and in mission focused over the long term. So if there's a way for us to think about alternate resources down the line, if there's a way for us to think about leveraging the private sector, I don't think it's appropriate for local government to, you know, try and be the savior and do all things in the housing market. But if we can incrementally think differently about our tools, bring in a few more here and there, play a catalytic role, I think that's where we want to go. This has been lovely to have this amount and to be able to do the major projects in the River District and soon to be the South Waterfront. But we know that that's not our future, to have that level of capital investment.
So. And I'll give you, Chris, just one other, looking over the horizon, one other concern we have is that as the economy begins to improve, the rental housing market's beginning to tighten.
Right.
And so as rents begin to recover, what we're going to have is pressure in the rental housing markets and a shortage of the units for people who are at the, you know, either desperately poor up to, you know, low-wage families struggling. And we estimate that there are over 15,000 households currently in Portland that the market doesn't serve. So if we're not taking those capital dollars and subsidizing the construction or preservation of housing to meet the needs of that community of citizens, then what we're going to have is probably more homeless and other kinds of challenges. So that's why the bricks and sticks dollars are so useful. But as Margaret said, we use a lot of our general fund dollars to fund the safety net programs that are a component of the 10-year plan to end homelessness.
There are other resources here besides TIF that are declining.
Correct.
Do those primarily affect capital or services?
Some of both, actually. Some of both. I would say maybe 50-50, just off the top of my head. We do use CDBG and HOME for services. But we're also trying to push as much as we can out the door for new construction. And I think one of the pieces that you'll see if you get a chance to look at the strategic plan is that very intentionally the first priority for new investment is new units for the very poorest in the community. We don't have nearly as many dollars as we'd like, but that's where we're trying to put every spare dollar.
Kate?
Yeah, I wanted to echo Dan Saltzman about the, and not necessarily where the dollars come from, but how important that the healthy homes inspectors are. And so when I saw that they were, you know, I'm not sure what you would say, jockeying or something, that there was some insecurity around that, I was concerned. And I do know that that when I originally heard about those inspectors, that one of the suggestions, and I think it's part of the East Portland Action Plan, is that one of those inspectors be dedicated to East Portland, which I would imagine is part of the district that would be covered.
And Katie, let me just say, in case there's any doubt here, mm-hmm. we are 110% supportive of a much more robust system of inspecting mm-hmm. because we know too many low-income households in our community are in substandard rental housing.
Indeed.
And the private side. Mm-hmm. The challenge has been, quite frankly, that to move this system forward, as Dan mentioned, we're going to need some general fund dollars mm-hmm. to get the recommendations of the Quality Rental Housing Work Group launched. And just at the time that that report came out, the Bureau of Development Services saw its funding cut in about half because of the decline in permit fees. And so we were doing some triage. And the question was, if you had one inspector, where would you put it?
Mm-hmm.
And some people said a graffiti abatement, noise, illegal signs. I mean, the whole range of things, new construction, you name it. So because of, in part, the decline in BDS resources, we haven't really been able to launch this. Commissioner Saltzman and I have had conversations with Commissioner Leonard, the fire commissioner, about launching a new look at how we can use all of our resources to implement those work group recommendations. Mm-hmm. We're solidly in favor of doing so. We just want to emphasize the point that every dollar we spend over here is a dollar we can't spend over here. We want the council to know what those trade-offs are. We're not ultimately in charge. We're not going to make the final decision about those trade-offs. But we want council to know that we don't have an infinite source of funds to cover all the priorities.
No, I hear the concern, and I understand. I wanted to make sure that you knew my concern.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
There was one other thing, and that was, it sounds like you're doing a city-wide housing strategy. And is that something, is that a new effort?
That would be
effort?
A new effort, correct, yes. This is the piece the mayor referenced.
Right, and do you have a really short way of explaining what that is about?
I would characterize it as a market analysis
mm-hmm.
in part, and some long-term planning in another, kind of in another respect.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very reactive to what comes in the door. And I think what we want to do is be in a position to be a little bit more planful about where the housing market is going over the long term and where can we best invest city resources so that we get ahead of some trends.
Mm-hmm.
Where can we nudge the market, if you will?
Mm-hmm.
But it has to start with a comprehensive market analysis, which
right.
we today do not have.
And I just wanted to say that I know that my community is always concerned when the low-income housing, sometimes they think that it's too much of it ends up
yes.
in East Portland.
I see.
And I'm not necessarily there, but I think that it would be important to involve people
Absolutely.
Who would know, so that they were on board with the decisions that
and
came
can,
out of
can
that.
Can I just mention one yeah. thing? Because Margaret has been very modest about something she and her team accomplished in the last 6 months. If you go to the Portland Housing Bureau's website, there's a new feature which allows you to see where every dollar is being spent out of our budget, citywide. So if you want to know how much east of 205 is being invested and how many units have been created, that's been mapped. And this goes to something the mayor challenged us a couple years ago,
right.
Year and a half ago, to begin to be more rigorous in tracking where dollars are being spent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's useful because there's some misconceptions about where the city dollars are going and how equitably it's being distributed.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, Margaret and her team announced awards of $10 million of funds that were available through an RFP, a NOFA process, a Notice of Funds Availability. And the funds were awarded largely in the Lentz area and some in the interstate area.
Mm-hmm.
And by and large, high-performing projects were selected that also happened to meet a number of the community concerns around housing older adults, rehabbing buildings that were eyesores, things of that nature. So I think there's a better story than sometimes people hear through the media, and I think one place to start is to go to the website and see where our dollars are being spent. But to your point, we will be very mindful of hearing the full city perspective on a plan,
mm.
and thank you for being the constant voice on that.
I would like to add, I think part of what I envision we get out of a long-term housing strategy is that if we're looking at the whole city, we can sort of say, where might we benefit from more low-income affordable housing because the schools are good, the transportation is good, there's a job base. Let's see if we can't target some here. Over here, maybe there's more affordable housing. The schools are struggling, so maybe we back off of that area.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's this area, what we're beginning to talk about in terms of areas of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And so where is there high opportunity in terms of other community assets? And we want to make sure that low-income people have the benefit of being able to live there. And where is there less opportunity and less rich assets, and that maybe we calibrate our investments? I think part of it is this idea that if we can look at the whole and say, well, let's not just build where the land happens to be the cheapest today.
Indeed.
Let's build where we want the community to have the diversity of housing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any ability to forecast that today, and I think that's one of the main benefits I see of the housing strategy.
Right.
So
yeah.
That, if I could, on Margaret's left hand, where through this process she and Commissioner Fish determine that the market is one way too much,
mm-hmm.
what have to define too much, but
right,
one way
right.
too much or another, what are the opportunities if it's so desired by decision makers and neighborhoods to balance that?
Right.
And what does it take to get the private investor interested in Gateway
right.
for market rate housing?
I don't have any ability to do that today.
Because right now she and the commissioner don't have a factual basis to have that discussion mm-hmm. with the marketplace. And we want our bureau to be the smartest people in the room, the proverbial room, when it comes to housing. And so I think actually what they're proposing speaks directly to the concerns that folks
right.
have and is a level of accountability at a finer grained sort than we've ever been able to do before. It's sort of the natural next step of the Portland plan.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sir.
So I wanted to, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Two questions. One, could you address the issue of support of the business community in your projects, mortgage
okay.
banks, credit unions, banks? And second, could you talk just a bit about the private affordable housing that's going on in Portland?
Right. So, there's little that we do in housing development or preservation that we are the sole funder for. It's a handful of sort of unique projects, but primarily we really have to rely on banks and equity providers. And so we are in pretty close touch with them about trends and things like low-income housing tax credits, private activity bonds, and those kinds of things. So we're in close touch and appreciate and know that the private sector has to play a role in our housing. I've lost the second part of your question.
The private affordable housing
private
projects
affordable.
That are going on now.
So here again, I don't have a good take on that, right? Because if they don't need our money or our tax abatement, they don't have any reason to talk to the Housing Bureau. So I think we don't have a current take on that. What we do is we look at sort of trends in rental rates and occupancy and things of that nature to have a bit of a sense of what's going on in the rental market. But if they don't need a dollar of mine, they tend not to talk to us.
Is there somebody in the city? I mean, if I were going to build affordable housing and use tax credits, mm-hmm. would I not have to talk to somebody in the city?
If you were going to use tax credits.
You would know about
yes,
that.
Yeah.
You'd
okay.
come
yeah,
to us.
Yeah,
okay.
yeah.
And if I could amplify what Margaret said about support of the business community. Mm-hmm. First of all, our new Portland Housing Advisory Commission has representatives of the business community on it. Recently, a group of us went to Seattle to meet with our counterparts to learn about how they're addressing housing generally at the city level, philanthropic level. We met with someone from the Gates Foundation and elsewhere. We took two representatives of the Portland Business Alliance with us as our partners. Last year at the mayor's request, the council added $1 million to address downtown homelessness issues. And we were charged by the council to be very creative about how we spend that money. We brought together a group of smart people to think about this and included Portland Business Alliance, property owners, advocates, the whole range. And they came up with a pretty innovative plan for how to get bottlenecks out of the system and to do some things differently downtown. And then finally, to the point that she made about the rich of the diversity of funding sources, the Resource Access Center, which we're now calling Bud Clark Commons, has about $29 million plus or minus of TIF in it. The rest is financing from banks through investors syndicating tax credits through bond financing. So 60% of it comes from the taxpayers making this investment. 40% we rely on the market to help us get it. So we are not successful unless we have strong partnerships with private actors, including banks. And I think you're seeing an unprecedented level of engagement with the business community in developing our strategies for housing going forward.
Great, thanks.
So getting back to the community development block grant, CDBG, and using that for the neighborhood inspectors, or the, I'm sorry, the healthy home inspectors. I see there's a statement in your budget about, for the first time, OMF is putting a general fund overhead charge on the CDBG grants,
that
which is almost equal, is about equal to the amount of the two healthy home inspectors. So I don't know if OMF wants to answer that, or, I mean, it's about, it looks like, if I'm reading it right, it's roughly a $200,000 overhead charge.
And Andrew, could you also explain why you don't care for teen programs?
Yeah. Do you want that to wait to parks, or we
can Commissioner Saltzman.
So, I mean, CDBG has been around.
Wholehearted Andrew Scott will now answer.
The Community Development Block Grant has been around a long time.
Yeah.
So is this the first time we're charging?
Yeah, no, that's right. And that gets back to this the quick conversation we had earlier about making housing a non-general fund bureau. And again, in sort of looking, I think what's been happening as the general fund resources have declined, I think as we point out in 11, 12, you know, housing will be getting less than 10% of its total budget from housing, but they're still considered general fund. So they don't pay general fund overhead, but they are using those general fund overhead services. And again, they pay for some of those through interagency agreements, but I don't think they pay for a lot. So what's really happening is that other non-general fund bureaus in the city are paying for some of those services that housing's using. So what our recommendation here is by calling them non-general fund and charging them the overhead, we would bring that more into equity. Now, it's hard to say exactly how much because, again, the way the overhead model works, it's hard to say exactly what that amount is, but that would, the additional charges are what's laid out there.
So has anybody checked whether that's legal per federal guidelines for getting grants like this?
Go ahead.
It's our understanding that we would need to do a modified general fund overhead calculation. We would need to pull out general government from the calculation, but otherwise it would be legal. So council services, for example, would need to be pulled out because they're considered general government. But
federal government doesn't allow us to charge our general government charges to federal grants, but other overhead charges are allowed.
So I would just like to wind up by saying, could you provide us the map that shows the CDBG eligible areas?
Absolutely.
And then also a list of everything proposed to be funded under CDBG in the 11-12 fiscal year? Line item?
You bet.
Okay, thanks.
You bet.
So let's go through the list in addition.
So can I ask something? I mean, I just would like to reiterate Commissioner Fritz's question about this move to housing being a non-general fund bureau. And so is that the only issue, that technical issue of how overhead is funded? Is that the only difference, basically?
Yeah, there potentially could be a change in terms it's very technical in terms of how we spend the general fund dollars. I think right now the general fund dollars are spent out of the general fund. If they became a non-general fund bureau, we would do a transfer to that, similar, I think, as we do with BOAC and some other non-general fund bureaus that receive general fund money. But you know, those are pretty technical, just sort of dollar transfer issues on the books.
So what kind of an impact have you figured that out yet? Or
In terms of the charges? Yeah.
Well, in terms of how it's going to impact their budget.
Yeah, we've done some preliminary analysis, and we would expect to phase it in over several years. And part of what would happen is because the overhead has a look back associated with it, that has a natural phase in. So I think ultimately it would probably be somewhere in the neighborhood of $600,000-$700,000 would be my guess. Mm-hmm.
Some of which would be offset by existing IA charges, but not by any means.
Right. And that number would decline. You know, we've also talked about treating it in some ways as a capital bureau, which the dollar amounts associated with capital are only calculated as 50% for the calculation. Because so much of the big dollar numbers that are driving it are are used for.
Let's make that retroactive too, since we're about to hit a TIF cliff on the capital.
And that's, yeah, and so looking, you know, that look back would then eventually shrink down.
Okay, thank you.
Did you have any auditorial advice?
No, not yet.
Mayor, before you wrap up, can we just introduce a couple people?
Yes.
I want to introduce Mark Jolin, who runs Join, who is our partner and does great work in the community.
He's also on the advisory commission.
I want to just do a shout out for Jesse Beeson, who runs Proud Ground. And Jesse, how many homeowners have you worked with during Proud Ground's tenure?
130.
And how many of those homeowners have experienced a foreclosure?
Zero.
So we think this model that Proud Ground has is working, and not a single foreclosure in their portfolio, which is extraordinary. Margaret, would you just introduce our team?
And then Kathy Briggs is a key partner with the Oregon Opportunity Network. If folks could stand up from my team, I won't say all the names in the interest of time, but if you work for the Housing Bureau, will you please let us?
Thanks for great work, team.
Thanks for your work. All right. We have the issue of, or the opportunity, the conversation, the tri-party conversation between Bureau of Housing, Development Services, and FIRE around a new look at inspections. Mm-hmm. Did you want fee schedule for inspections?
Just see what comes up.
Yep. Fee schedule for inspections, various kinds of inspections and kinds of fees, and why don't we make that sort of equally tri-party universal, tri-bureau, the bureaus I mentioned as well. I have down the Metro Housing Council offer and sort of more discussion around the 50-50 split, healthy home inspectors, continuing the discussion about the general fund versus non-general fund overhead charges status. Is there any more to talk about, or are you just in the sussing about on the TIF cliff?
No, but we'll come back to this when we give you the report on the 30% set aside generally, and we'll talk more about our forecast.
Okay. And then you asked for the map, and you asked for the way the budget, the CDGB
proposed
the
budget.
Detail of the expenditures, yes. Where it's being
CDBG
spent.
CDBG 11-12.
And then if you could, there was it's a small request. There was a state program that was cut in the last biennium that helped get folks likely eligible for long-term disability onto long-term disability.
Benefits, yes.
And if you could take a look at that and give me your opinion whether we could reverse engineer if you had eight of those people qualified, what kind of housing project could you build for them based on the disability income only, and whatever, how much would we have to subsidize it, and how much would it cost to go through all the paperwork and all that stuff? Did I forget one?
Final comment, and that is thank you very much for your help, Margaret, in as we thought about setting up the Office of Equity. Mm-hmm. And since I often look at the numbers and I'm disappointed, I need to call out here that we have in the Housing Bureau 69% female, 31% minorities, and the contract dollars 18.3% to minority women and emerging small businesses. So definitely a bureau that has put some focus into the equity issues, and it shows in the numbers, so thank you very much.
And Amanda, if I could just plant a seed. Block 49 is the first development that Margaret and her team have handled soup to nuts. And so we won't have those numbers, obviously, for some time, but the preliminary read we're getting is we're going to have some very strong numbers on MWESB, and reflecting Margaret's commitment to trying some different things to really push our contractors and our partners to get to where we want to be. So we'll have more to share with you later on that.
All right. Thank you all. We have a 5-minute break to get development services.